Hello, this is Bob Damaris broadcasting to you from West Virginia on 3 February 2006. I'm a concerned American speaking to you about the imminent destruction that our people face. If you are unwilling to act now, you are part of the problem, not part of the solution. This program was written, produced, and spoken by Robert A. Damaris, Ph.D., who is solely responsible for its content. Today's program is entitled, The Mexican Standoff at Neely's Crossing, and it was recorded live without editing. In my previous program entitled, Mexican Incursions into the United States, I presented the background for today's main story. Before the Mexican Standoff, there were 219 documented incursions by Mexican soldiers into U.S. territory since 1996. I discussed a first incident near Neely's Crossing where U.S. Border Patrol agents and other law enforcement officers chased a dump truck, which was loaded with 3 tons of high-grade Mexican marijuana, until it became stuck trying to recross the Rio Grande River back into Mexico, and how the dump truck was rescued by uniformed Mexicans with assault rifles who appeared to be from the Mexican Army and who used a bulldozer to pull the dump truck out of the mud and who assisted the dump truck to escape to safety in Mexico. Before I relate today's main story, let me briefly cover an unrelated event that occurred the day before in the same county, Hutchfutz County, Texas. A nice Chevrolet Blazer was occupied by 2 young Mexican men and was about to cross back into Mexico. A Border Patrol agent noticed considerable blood on the rear seat. The driver, when questioned by agents about the blood, confessed to killing in the U.S. The driver was Angel Jesus Terreras. I'll just anglicize his name and call him Angel Jesus. We don't know the truth, but here's what Angel Jesus confessed to. He said that he had a cocaine deal go bad with Priscilla Roseanne Garcia, an unwed mother who owned the Blazer and who lived in San Antonio. Angel Jesus had 2 guns in the back seat of her Blazer. Those firearms were an AK-47 semi-automatic assault rifle and a 9mm Mac 11. A Mac 11 is a submachine gun-looking pistol preferred by drug dealers. Angel Jesus claims that Señorita Garza grabbed the Mac 11, but he grabbed it away. Then she grabbed the AK-47. He knocked it away, but she again pointed it at him. What's a nice Mexican boy supposed to do? He opened fire with the Mac 11 and blew her away. Bullets hit her in the arm and right between the eyes. Hitting someone between the eyes is difficult, and even a dumb Mexican drug dealer does not shoot for the head during what he thinks is a heated gun battle. My guess is that Angel Jesus just executed her, and I think we can be confident that after spending $1 million for forensics in her trial, that Angel Jesus will serve about 20 years in federal prison at your expense. In prison, he will have the opportunity to advance himself by sharing tips on drug dealings and murders with his fellow Mexicans. Poor Angel Jesus. He just came to the U.S. to work hard and fulfill his Mexican family values and share the American dream. Now let us get to the main story, the second incident at Neely's Crossing, which occurred 67 days after the dump truck incident. About 1:15 on Monday afternoon, 23 January 2006, a Hutchfutz County Sheriff's deputy spotted 3 suspicious sports utility vehicles, SUVs, on Interstate 10 about 50 miles east of El Paso. He immediately suspected that Mexican drug smugglers were bringing illegal aliens, drugs, or some other contraband across the border, so he radioed for backup. The Mexican convoy spotted him, made a sharp U-turn, and roared down the interstate for 9 miles. The deputies chased the Mexicans at speeds of 110 miles an hour. Then the 3 SUVs exited and headed south, back toward Mexico, which is only 3 miles away. By this time, a total of 3 deputies were in pursuit. The Mexicans raced cross-country toward a spot near the infamous Neely's Crossing. At this point, 2 Texas state troopers also joined the chase. The border at Neely's Crossing is the Rio Grande River, which is quite wide. MSNBC says about 200 feet wide, but mostly dry. The actual water is only 16 feet wide. Suddenly a tire blew out on one of the Mexican vehicles, a Cadillac Escalade. Its occupant or occupants tried to continue to the border, but finally bailed out and escaped across the river. The Cadillac had been reported stolen earlier in El Paso. As an aside, each year Mexicans steal about 200,000 vehicles in the U.S. and transport them to Mexico. Let me say that again, 200,000 vehicles per year. Most are expensive vehicles. The loss exceeds $8 billion per year. The Cadillac Escalade was packed with large bundles of marijuana, which were later weighed to total 1,477 pounds. As is often the case in Hudspeth County, Chief Deputy Arvin West was in the lead of the pursuing American posse. West is a veteran, no-nonsense cop, and from our point of view, we couldn't have had a better man on the job because West is blunt and outspoken, as we shall see. At about this point, the Americans were confronted by a Mexican military-type green Humvee. The Humvee was about 200 yards inside the U.S. border. Deputies reported that it had what appeared to be a 50-caliber mounted machine gun and was covering the escape of the 2 remaining SUVs. The men manning the Humvee appeared to be wearing Mexican military uniforms described as BDUs, or camouflage battle dress uniforms. The remaining 2 SUVs raced across the riverbed. However, one of the 2, a Ford Expedition, got stuck as it tried to climb the riverbank on the Mexican side. A Toyota 4Runner made it up the bank and into the criminal sanctuary that we call Mexico. The military-type green Humvee then withdrew across the Rio Grande riverbed. Mexicans protected the stuck Ford Expedition on both flanks and pointed machine guns at the Americans. The machine gun-toting Mexicans were covering the Americans, who were helpless to stop the escape. According to the Los Angeles Times, there were as many as 20 Mexicans armed with numerous fully automatic firearms. 4 days after the incident, the Hudspeth County Sheriff said he received official confirmation from the U.S. government that one of the machine guns that the Mexican soldiers were carrying was an M4 carbine. The M4 is one of the latest types used by the U.S. Army and foreign armies that we equipped. The M4 is a fully automatic firearm with a collapsible stock, and it is capable of firing 950 rounds per minute. If I may be a bit sarcastic, whoever the Mexicans were, they did not obtain their weapons from a pawn shop in El Paso, that's for sure. Deputy Mike Doyle later told reporters, quote, "It's been so bred into everyone not to start an international incident with Mexico that it's been going on for years. When you're up against mounted machine guns, what can you do? Who wants to pull the trigger first? Certainly not us," unquote. What we had was a classic Mexican standoff. The deputies called for more backup, and this time the deputies were able to take photographs. The rest of the story is documented with official Sheriff's Department photographs. Texas State Troopers and Border Patrol agents began to trickle in until a total of 9 Americans were at the scene. Meanwhile, on the Mexican side, the Humvee had backed up and was attempting to rescue the Ford Expedition by towing it up the riverbank. After 3 attempts and considerable tire spinning, the Mexicans gave up. Several smugglers in civilian clothing emerged from the brush on the Mexican side and under the direction of a very fat Mexican, they calmly carried bales of marijuana from the Stuck Fort expedition up the riverbank, where they stockpiled them in broad daylight. Some of the Mexicans burned the Fort expedition, while other Mexicans loaded the bales of marijuana into another vehicle. The Mexicans simply got into the vehicles and disappeared into Mexico. Is something missing here? Where's Mexican law enforcement? Why didn't it show up as events unfolded? The aftermath of this story is almost as interesting as the story itself. It begins with the deputies talking to local reporters and describing the incident as I've related it. Law enforcement officers learn to be very vigilant. They are professional witnesses. All of them report that the uniformed men were Mexican soldiers. When pressed by reporters as to whether the uniformed men were actually Mexican soldiers, County Sheriff's Deputy Arvin West said, quote, "If it rattles like a snake, and it looks like a snake, it's probably a damn snake. There's no doubt that it's Mexican military," unquote. Deputy West reiterated his position in a phone conversation with Voice of America. He said, quote, "There's no doubt in my mind that it is Mexican military and that it's been that way for years," unquote. The Mexican government immediately denied that it was real Mexican soldiers. The next day, Mexican Consul General Juan Carlos Berumen, Señor Berumen, said in El Paso that he knows for sure that it was an official Mexican army. The Mexican Defense Ministry said, quote, there were no Humvees assigned to the fort at Ciudad Juarez with that type of weapon, unquote. Now, that kind of statement might fool a civilian, but it won't fool you veterans. Let me read it again. Quote, "There were no Humvees assigned to the fort at Ciudad Juarez with that type of weaponry." Note that the Defense Ministry did not deny that there are Humvees and 50-caliber machine guns at Ciudad Juarez. They only deny that the Humvees were actually equipped with 50-caliber machine guns. All military Humvees have weapons mounts, and it's only about a 30-second operation to mount a 50-caliber machine gun. Mexican officials also said that drug gangs often wear military uniforms. Want to hear more? Here's what one apologist for the Mexicans said, quote, "Some Mexican police even rent out their uniforms or patrol cars to shake down artists," unquote. No kidding. And we're to believe that the Mexican army, which we know is corrupt, wouldn't be involved in protecting drug gangs and working for drug cartels. The biggest liar in this episode was Mexican Foreign Minister Luis Ernesto Derbez. The Foreign Secretary is equivalent to our Secretary of State. Señor Derbez said that the men in Mexican army uniforms were not Mexican soldiers, but could have been from the Norte Americano Army. Señor Derbez said in part, quote, "Members of the U.S. Army has helped protect people who were processing and transporting jobs, and just as this has happened, it is very probable that something like that could have happened, that in reality they were members of some of their U.S. groups disguised as Mexican soldiers with Humvees," unquote. Señor Derbez is one of the top three Mexicans in the Mexican government, and he is incapable of telling the truth. He's proof that the top Mexicans are just as big a liars as are the bottom Mexicans. They are congenital liars. They're born that way. Another apologist for the Mexicans tried to blame the Zetas, who are unlikely to have been involved, because the Zetas, a private army of one of the drug cartels, operate near Naval Laredo, which is east, 500 miles as the crow flies. On Mexico's primitive and decrepit roads, it's a long trip through territory occupied by other strong drug gangs. Another liar for the government of Mexico was Señor Ruben Francisco Aguilar, the spokesman for Vicente Fox, Presidente of all Mexico. Senor Aguilar said that the U.S. FBI supported the view that these were not Mexican soldiers, but he gave no evidence for this claim. Senor Francisco Aguilar also said that Senor Fox had ordered a new alert zone. Under the new alert zone plan, Mexican Army soldiers will not be allowed within 3 miles of the U.S. border without permission. So reporters contacted the Defense Ministry and talked to the official spokesman of the Army, Press Officer Senor Francisco Aguilar. Now don't get confused. Ruben Francisco Aguilar is Fox's spokesman, and Francisco Aguilar is a Mexican Army spokesman. Neither should be confused with David Aguilar, Bush's hand-picked head of the U.S. Border Patrol. Anyway, the Army spokesman said that he had never heard of the alert zone. Another Army official just shrugged it off and said they have always had a border zone requiring permission for Army soldiers entering. You can't get a straight answer out of a Mexican. Now let us examine what the U.S. FBI actually did say about the standoff incident near Neely's Crossing. The FBI's spokeswoman in El Paso, Agent Andrea Simmons, said, quote, "Bad guys in three vehicles ended up on the border. People with Humvees who appeared to be with the Mexican Army were involved with the three vehicles getting them back across. At this point, no federal laws that we investigate were violated. We, the FBI, were not involved," unquote. Who is this woman kidding? Does she expect us to believe that no federal laws that the FBI investigates were broken? Well, Ms. Simmons, have you ever heard of drug laws? Did you know that it's against the law to point a 50 caliber machine gun at federal employees? Did you know that it's illegal to possess machine guns without a license? Have you ever heard of laws against suspected felony fugitives fleeing across the border? Ms. Simmons is an FBI official with a law degree with honors who was handpicked for a job. She's no dumb bimbo, but many of you probably have a different name for what she really is. You know, I wonder if you or I had done just part of what happened at Neely's Crossing, would the FBI have been involved? What if a leader of the white movement had been caught with just 5 pounds of marijuana, or had just possessed one small machine gun, or had just pointed a little .22 rifle at a federal law enforcement agent? Would the FBI have been involved? You bet. Ms. Simmons did prove that Aguilar is a liar. That is, Senor Francisco Aguilar, the spokesman for Vicente Fox, president of all Mexico, who lied when he said the FBI had investigated and the FBI agreed with his version. In any event, Ms. Simmons told the reporters to talk to ICE, which is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is formerly called the Immigration and Naturalization Service, or INS. U.S. Customs and Border Protection oversees both ICE and the Border Patrol. Their spokesman, Mike Friel, said, quote, "It's important to put this in perspective. Incursions do happen on both sides. For the most part, they are infrequent. Generally, these incursions are situations that happen when authorities are pursuing criminals, usually in unmarked stretches of the border. These reports of incursions are being overblown," unquote. Of course, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, ICE, and the Border Patrol are all part of Homeland Security, which is headed by Mr. Michael Chertoff. Chertoff was quoted as saying about the border incursions, quote, "A significant number of those are innocent things because they're not aware of exactly where the line is," unquote. Oh boy, what chutzpah. T.J. Bonner, president of the National Border Patrol Council, the Border Patrol Agents Union, essentially called Chertoff a liar. Bonner said that Border Patrol agents and deputies know where the border is. Besides, we're talking about the Rio Grande Riverbed at a notorious border crossing that every law enforcement agent within 100 miles of Neely's Crossing knows about. The day after the standoff, Bush's ambassador to Mexico, Tony Garza, delivered a note of mild protest to the Mexican government, and Garza commented on it in public. The Mexican government complained that Garza was interfering with Mexico's internal business and should keep his mouth shut. The next day, Senor Garza sent a second, even milder note and refused to comment on the situation. Bush and Fox were eyeball to eyeball, and Bush backed down. Senor Garza is just one of the hundreds of men in Bush's Mexican mafia that control almost all the key jobs in our federal government concerning Mexico. Despite denials by high-level Mexicans, law enforcement officers and Border Patrol officials in the U.S. continued to keep pressure on and continued to strongly suggest that evidence would prove that the Mexicans had actual Mexican Army vehicles, uniforms, and weapons. Deputy Sheriff Arvin West continued to pound away at those who claim that the soldiers at Neely's Crossing did not possess official Mexican Army equipment. He attacked Chertoff and other Bush officials. Quote, "Let's clarify that. It was the Mexican military. There's no doubt in my mind. Let's quit lying, work together, and stop this crap." Unquote. Specifically of Chertoff, West said, quote, "This moron has no clue of what's going on down here. He micromanages the U.S. Border Patrol, does press releases, and reports to the president and says that these issues are the issues when he's never been down there. It's a dog-eat-dog game out there now," unquote. Deputy West is partly wrong, because Chertoff is not a moron micromanaging the Border Patrol out of ignorance of what's going on. Chertoff is a genius who is cleverly and deliberately micromanaging the Border Patrol to promote his own agenda, an agenda that will result in the destruction of the white race in the U.S. Hudsfuts County farmer Gene Anderson, who sees Mexican criminals crossing his land nearly every day, was quoted as saying, quote, "It's all about politics, all the way to the top, here and on the other side," unquote. He's right. The real criminals who are fostering the invasion of drugs, drug gangs, and killers are at the top. Let's make no mistake about it. These men are George Bush and Vicente Fox. We don't have to prove that they are in the pay of drug gangs to declare them common criminals. The burden of proof is only that they knew that they knew of illegal activities or should have known. I had this program completed, but I had to add information concerning the upcoming, quote, hearings, unquote, by the U.S. House of Representatives. And we should put the word hearings in quotes, because these hearings are really speakings. The congressmen are just posturing and speaking to their voters. They are only after votes. They're not after facts. The hearings will be on 7 February 2006. As you know, everything in Texas is big. In fact, Houston is 650 miles as the crow flies from Hudsfuts County, and it is 300 miles as the crow flies from the border. When you hear your congressman say that he went to Texas to find out what was happening down there, he is a liar, a bald-faced, congenital liar. Of course, he wouldn't be elected to high office if he wasn't a liar. Comparing honesty among politicians is like comparing virginity among prostitutes. Reporters asked Chief Deputy West about the hearings. He was not impressed and said, quote, "There is no doubt in our minds that we confronted Mexican military personnel on the border. I'm not gratified that we had to back the congressman into a corner and carry video equipment instead of our guns to the operation," unquote. Having lived in Texas, West Texas, I can tell you that many West Texans are just as tough today as they were in the days when they rode horses and used six-shooters. Deputy West is angry because until he got actual photographs proving that the Mexicans had official Mexican Army equipment, no one would believe him. That is the same as calling him a liar. Nor would they believe the hundreds of other American law enforcement officers and ranchers who are eyewitnesses to hundreds of incursions by heavily armed uniformed Mexicans. No one in the mainstream media or in Congress wants to believe it because it does not fit their agenda. Hold the press. I've had to edit this program for a second time to add additional information. Will I never get this program on the air? Truth is stranger than fiction, so grab onto your computer chairs. Late in the afternoon of 29 January 2006, a Fox News crew was interviewing a deputy in Hutchfatz County near Neely's Crossing at the site of the standoff with the Mexican Humvee. This was 2 days after the Humvee incident. Suddenly, you guessed it, a Mexican soldier in military uniform wearing body armor and carrying a fully automatic assault rifle walked out of the brush on the Mexican side of the border. The Mexican spotted the news crew and ducked back into the brush. The deputy and the news crew stared in disbelief, first because the Mexican government had pledged that no soldiers were going to be operating within 3 miles of the border, and second because the Mexican, who was on his own side of the border, was trying to hide. Why would he be trying to hide? Here's what Fox Television said about what happened next. Quote, moments later, two other men who appeared to be soldiers marched across the clearing in plain view. Shortly after that, the deputy spotted soldiers who were well hidden, out of camera range, crossing into the United States, attempting to flank the deputy and the news crew, unquote. Fox Television did photograph the two uniformed men who appear to be soldiers and who were carrying assault rifles and wearing body armor. In summary, Mexicans first tried to hide from the Americans, who were obviously on legitimate business. Then they sent other Mexican troops in a tactical maneuver across the Rio Grande into sovereign American territory and tried to take the Americans from the flank. Fox quoted the deputy as saying, while this was occurring, quote, they are doing the classic things, flanking around each side of us and actually coming into the U.S. and trying to figure out what we are doing, and they are looking at us very heavily, unquote. At that point, the news crew and the deputy decided to bug out, ending the events at the third incursion near Neely's Crossing. That night, in a telephone conversation, the U.S. Border Patrol questioned Mexican authorities. The Mexicans finally acknowledged that there were, in fact, Mexican soldiers in the area. The next day, the Mexican consulate reiterated the admission, but changed the story to say that they really weren't Mexican soldiers in the area, but these were just state police officers from the Mexican state of Chihuahua. The Albuquerque Journal quoted the deputy involved in this third incident as saying, quote, if it's going to take a bunch of us getting killed down there on the river to show everybody that it's a problem, then it is going to happen. One of these days it will happen, unquote. If this deputy understands the political score, he knows that his life and the lives of law enforcement officers have no value to politicians unless those lives translates into votes. At his funeral, in front of his parents, in front of his crying wife, and in front of his confused children, politicians will give speeches to gain votes. In these two programs, I have only had enough time to document a few of the 216 known incursions by Mexican soldiers into U.S. territory. The incursions that I have talked about were in areas where the border is clearly marked by fences or the Rio Grande River. If our people know where the border is, the Mexicans should know, unless they are inferior. The Mexican government is easy to work with and willing to compromise. The last time we had a major dispute was in the 1840s. All we had to do was invade their country by land and sea, sink their navy, destroy their armies, and capture their capital. Then the Mexicans were willing to negotiate. The surrender document is known as the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which was signed on the day that I'm writing this program, February 2nd. The year was 1848. The Mexican incursions that are described in this program and the previous one include military vehicles, dump trucks, bulldozers, convoys of SUVs, and numerous machine guns and assault rifles. The operations are being carried out by groups, or large groups, of reasonably disciplined, sophisticated men who must be using radio or cell phones, which could easily be monitored. The groups are either Mexican military or are large enough to have enough equipment that the Mexican authorities could locate them if they wanted to and if they were not being paid off by bribes. Whether these incidents are operations of actual Mexican military units deliberately in conjunction with narco traffickers or accidentally due to the usual Mexican incompetence, or whether these incursions are actions by large sophisticated bandito armies, it is long past time that the U.S. government should have, one, held the Mexican government fully accountable for armies, regular or private, operating from Mexican territory, two, used full and necessary military force to stop the Mexican army or bandito army units from aiding narco traffickers inside the U.S. If this means raids into Mexico by U.S. Army commando teams and attacks by fighter bombers on suspected Mexican drug lord strongholds, so be it. I'm not talking about six Americans sneaking into Mexico to kidnap one fat, greasy scumbag and drag him back to the U.S. We're already doing that. What I'm talking about is raids by Ranger battalions and brigade-sized mechanized forces. And if this does not virtually stop the problem within 6 months, the U.S. should invade Mexico and smash any resistance and stomp the Mexicans like the cockroaches that they are. But this won't happen under the current system in the U.S. The Mexican government and the people of Mexico unofficially have declared war on us in many ways. The military incursions into the U.S. are just one type of those acts of war. But the U.S. government will not act. Even if the voters force the U.S. government into some action, that action will be just enough for the news media to create the illusion of progress, and then it will be back to business as usual. And the people in power will keep doing this again and again until it's too late. I have seen this repeatedly. They all do it. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton and that son of a Bush, and whoever is elected in 2008. They get away with it because the real power in the U.S. is not the decent voter. The real power is the Jewish-dominated news media and entertainment industry, and the mainstream churches with their perverted modern morals. The real power is two political parties which are terminally corrupt and which have the power to essentially prevent any third party. If you don't believe me, just wait for your government to help. It has not, and it will not act decisively. If you don't believe me, then just sit on your rear end and wait until your country goes under like Zapata County, Texas has. Wait until the Mexican banditos are operating openly in the U.S. the way that they do in Mexico. They are already here. They just aren't powerful enough to operate openly yet. If you don't believe me, wait until the percentage of Mexicans in our law enforcement agencies rises to the point of corruption. The police forces of Los Angeles, Houston, and other cities are already rampant with Mexican corruption. To the extent that Mexicans come to the U.S. will become like Mexico. If you don't believe me, then just sit on your rear end until it's too late to save your people from enslavement and from eventual extermination by the tidal wave of Mexican immigrants and the crime, poverty, and filth that they always bring. If you don't believe me, then just sit on your rear waiting for a cohesive white movement to form. By then, it will be too late. The only action is individual action. All propaganda action is individual action. Sure, you can use propaganda created by others like me, and you can use the tiny white media to get your message out, but you must do it. If you don't act now, the Mexican horde will ride past your worthless corpse and laugh as it looks for the next gringo. The key to understanding Mexicans is to know that 90% of them are either Indians or part-breed Indians. Furthermore, the few white Mexicans that there are have very little reason to immigrate to the United States. The Sioux and the Navajos cannot govern themselves. We cannot expect the Mexicans to govern themselves. A Mexican is just an Indian who speaks Spanish. The Mexican invasion and its related crime dwarf all our other combined racial problems. I know some of you are more interested in Jewish influence in the media, in Iraq or Iran, or in Jesse Jackson, but you are wrong. Until next time, this is Bob Damaris speaking from West Virginia and reminding you that the Mexicans are not looking for a sign from the Jews. They're just looking for a hole in the fence. This program was recorded on 3 February 2006. Thank you.